Mode.
Greetings, everybody. This is Brian Therrien from the Disability Digest, and I'm here today with Kathy West Evans for our Disability Digest Jobs and Income Conference. How are you today, Kathy?
I'm doing just great, Brian. Thanks.
Great, great. I just want to address a few housekeeping issues for those that are listening in from out there, and whether you've dialed in via the phone or logged on via the internet. You are currently in a listen-only mode, which means that you'll be able to hear Kathy and I throughout the conversation, and then later on in the broadcast, we have collected some questions from members, and we will also, if time permits, I know you're on a tight schedule today, Kathy, we will take a few live questions. So, if you talk and you don't think that we're not listening to you, that's not it at all. It's just that we can't hear you because it's just you're in the listen-only mode now. So, at any rate, we've got a lot to go over today. And first, I want to thank you, Kathy, for taking the time to spend with us today. Excited about this topic. You know, going back to work, supplementing income is something that's near and dear to the audience out there. So, we're anxious to get your input on you know, on some tips that might help them and what's going on in the vocational rehabilitation world these days. So. Appreciate that. Before we get started, I just a little bit of information for the audience so they know who you are. You're calling in from Washington today, right?
Yeah, from the other Washington, Washington State.
Washington.
I live east of Seattle.
Very nice. A city that I haven't been to but want to go. I've reviewed some of your work. You have an extensive, you know, experience in the rehabilitation world since 1978, and it appears that you've really done or developed an expertise for working for, you know, the deaf or with the deaf and the deaf-blind, hard of hearing related programs. And you've moved on from there, and now you're working and have worked as a voc rehab counselor, correct?
Yes. I worked for the state of Washington VR program for 14 years as a counselor and an assistant regional administrator and the statewide program manager for business relations and marketing.
Great, great. So, you know, what people really want to know, Kathy, and we'll go on to what you're doing now, is the audience out there is really interested in learning, you know, about how much money they can make and keep their benefits. And the whole, really the biggest concern is going back to work and how that will impact their benefits. And, you know, that's the thought process. And it might even be a limiting thought process for people before they even pick up the phone or make that initiative to go to a voc rehab office to investigate it. So I believe there's a drastic misunderstanding. People can work. They can supplement their income. They can keep their benefits. They can migrate back into the work world part-time, full-time, at an easy, easy process and keep their benefits. So anxious to go over that with you today. So let's, if we could, before we get into the, you know, the heart of the lineup here, let's talk about what you're doing now with the Rehab Network, and it's also known as the CSAVR, all these acronyms out there in the disability world.
Yeah, well, obviously it's an acronym that wasn't developed by a marketing company. you know, Brian, I want to say, you know, I have worked at the community level. I've worked for the state. I've worked for the federal government. The organization that I work with now is the membership organization of all of the 80 VR directors across the country. There are 80 VR programs in the states and the territories. But before I talk a little bit about that system, I want people to know that I'm a family member of 6-8 people that have actually been served by the VR program, and I also provide ongoing support to my brother, who is a disabled veteran who happens to be quadriplegic with a traumatic brain injury. And, you know, so a lot of my experience and my commitment to what I do comes from that personal perspective. Because, you know, currently my brother is living independently, and we've got a variety of supports in place. And he's working part-time and raising a 12-year-old daughter, which I think is his biggest job. But he, you know, continues to have the benefits and supports of multiple systems. So I just wanted to say that as part of my introduction, because I know it's not easy to navigate the systems. And believe me, I've had a lot of personal experience and frustrations, and have found good people as I've gone to. So I want to bring that into our discussion. But as I said, CSAVR is the membership organization of the ADVR program. We have 80 programs because this is a state-federal partnership. So the program itself is authorized under federal legislation called the Rehabilitation Act, but that federal money goes to the state, and the governor in each state determines how the program is set up within the state. So in some states, we have two agencies, one serving individuals who are blind separately from an agency that's serving individuals in what we call a general program. In some states, it's a combined agency. We also have agencies in the territories, so we have programs in Guam, Puerto Rico, the Northern Marianas Islands. So that's how we come, you know, to have 80 programs. As I said, each one of these agencies operates differently in different organizations within the state. They could be a standalone agency like a commission, or they could be housed within an umbrella organization like human services, labor, education. So I think, you know, that's one of the reasons this program is confusing, is where do I go in my local level, and they're all called different names. But that's kind of the background of what the program looks like.
Okay. It wouldn't be as simple as having one agency per state. So, but, you know, at least the resources are out there. This is good to know.
Yeah. I mean, it's the whole concept of, you know, the state's rights in determining how services are delivered and how it's combined with other agencies within that state, which could be, you know, your medical services or your developmental disabilities, mental health agencies, et cetera.
You know, a few things I wanted to mention that I was intrigued by. First one is that you're responsible for is it appears, or as you mentioned to me, that you've developed this best practices process between the 80 directors, in that if there's something that's working here in Vermont with our friend Hugh that works here, and he shares the idea that it might work out there in Washington, that's, you know, that's beneficial information. And that's, if you could maybe expand on that a little bit, I feel that that's very, one of the most proactive things, you know, that can be done, because once you can really unlock the key to putting people back to work and share that, it's going to make a difference.
Oh, definitely. Well, what I'm working on right now is a national initiative that's sponsored by CSAVR. And what it focuses on is how we work together across the country on our relationships with business. Because we all know, you know, we've seen Harris poll after Harris poll that says that the number one barrier for people with disabilities in the workplace is the attitude of people who are making decisions about hiring, promotion, and retention. So our strategy is working with those companies up front to help alleviate some of those concerns, answer questions, build a relationship with them so that when there are questions, they're not just saying, well, I'm not going to hire that person with a disability because they're in a wheelchair, or they, you know, can't read print, or they can't hear, or, you know, they don't process information like everyone else. It's those fears, because as a society, we've been taught that it's not okay to ask questions. So that creates a lot of misunderstanding. And I'm sure the audience deals with that, particularly if you're a person with a disability or a family member. I'm sure you deal with that frequently. So what we've done is developed a team that's national in scope that delivers locally to these businesses. Because the other trend that we're all very aware of is that business is now multi-state and global. So if we are working successfully with a business in Florida, or as Brian said, in Vermont, but they also have business operations in Ohio, Iowa, Idaho, and California, then how do we leverage those connections in Vermont and expand our relationships with those companies so that people with disabilities in all of those states have access to that company, and we get the word out through our network to individuals who are looking for work at what those opportunities look like.
Great stuff. You know, I've said this before publicly, and I just want to voice my two cents here, is I really feel that American businesses have totally missed it, and they radically misunderstand, you know, the quality of work, the work ethic, and the great opportunity that exists by employing people that are disabled. And I use a Disability Digest as an example. I mean, this is all run by our members that are disabled, with the exception of one person that is non-disability, because that position just wouldn't allow it. And, I mean, this business would not be what it is today without, you know, the great work. I mean, it's brilliant. So I just feel that it's a part of educating our members and then bringing the businesses to the table and, you know, have a big peace pipe and, you know, let's get on with it. So that's my take. So,
oh, definitely. There's a lot of talent out there that's untapped, and I think,
yeah,
you know, we need to help people get past that perspective that it's about the disability, because it isn't. We're looking at people with talent who are motivated to work, and, you know, what we see in trends is that, you know, individuals, once they're on the job, are in many cases outperforming and more dependable. So,
yes.
Break those stereotypes.
Exactly. So let's go on and talk about vocational rehabilitation. And for those that, you know, in the audience that, you know, maybe they're impaired or they're just getting ready to go back to work and they don't really know what voc rehab does. Can you give us the, you know, the ABCs of, you know, what they could expect, what they could, you know, get from sitting down with a counselor?
Sure. Well, vocational rehabilitation is a program that was actually established in federal legislation in 1920. So it's a program with a long history. And initially the program was set up to serve injured workers and veterans who were returning from the conflicts at that point, World War II. So what has happened over a period of time is that the veterans have established their own program, and so the Department of Veterans Affairs has a VR program, and we're not the same, but we do serve about 16,000 cases jointly. The Injured Worker Program has broken off and has become its own separate program, and then the state VR, the federal-state partnership, has become the public VR program. For those of you who are not injured because you were involved in active military duty or because it was a work-related injury, you can apply for the public vocational rehabilitation program. And the eligibility requirements are that you have a disability that's posing barriers to you in getting employment, that you want to work, and that you can gain benefits from the program. Pretty simple. What happens is that you go through an eligibility process, and what is very helpful when you first sit down with your counselor is to, you know, share with that person, you know, what are the barriers that you've experienced. People have disabilities that sound similar on paper. You know, you may have a person with a disability of blindness, maybe that's the diagnosis. But we all know that it's different for each individual. So what barriers does that create for you in the workplace? I mean, we know some individuals might need to use a screen reader. Some can use magnification or large print. But, you know, it varies for individuals. So when you're working with a counselor, it helps if you can help them understand either what you're experienced or, you know, the barriers that you experience in everyday life if you haven't actually been in the workplace. And then what are your goals? What are your strengths and abilities? And where would you like to see yourself in the future? really kind of thinking through that. Now, also, when you sit down with a counselor, it's good to have an understanding of not just what the workplace looks like, but what do you need in terms of support of everyday living? Do you need assistance with transportation to get to and from the workplace? Are you going to need assistance with family supports like maybe daycare or, other personal care assistance? Thinking through as an individual, what supports are you going to need to allow you to be successful in the workplace? And that's the type of discussion that your counselor and you will have as you begin looking and working through the eligibility process. And, you've got a set of barriers that are somehow keeping you from being employed, and how do you reduce the impact of those barriers and or eliminate them? I mean, in some cases we can't totally eliminate them, but we can reduce the impact that it has on your ability to be successful in the workplace. So, thinking about that, thinking about your goals, then you work together with your counselor to build what's called an individual plan for employment. And here's another acronym, the IPE, not to be confused if you have a child with a disability who's in the school program on the individual education program. And I don't know why we have to choose acronyms that are similar to each other, but in our program, that's what it's called, the IPE. And the IPE will be a listing of services that you and your counselor agree upon are necessary to overcome those barriers, things that you've discussed, to allow you to meet your vocational goal. Now, because each of you is individual, that's going to vary person to person, and I think that's the real beauty of the Rehabilitation Act and the VR program, is that we are not menu-driven. We are designed to support the individual based on a holistic plan that can be very comprehensive. Now, we may not pay for all services, but we will help you look at who out there can do that. So, for example, if you are interested in going or it's necessary that you go through some training or education, we would help you look at how to apply for a Pell Grant, because that Pell Grant is another program that can help you meet expenses, which leaves the funding that we have available to help you meet expenses that won't be covered by another program. So that's how we work through it all on the individual plan. And then we work together on following up. If you're in school, how are you doing? Do you need supports? Once you graduate, as you're going through that transition, do we need to build in an internship program? How do we get you work experience that'll help you be more competitive, etc.? If you're a person on Social Security, because you meet the definition of disability and eligibility for Social Security, you have what's called presumptive eligibility for the VR program. Now, for someone on Social Security, as my brother, we've done a lot of service coordination with different systems, but we've also worked very carefully with a benefits coordinator, because Social Security changes every year in terms of sometimes this, the SGA, the stand for gainful activity, the level of earnings that you can earn without losing your benefits changes, but it's always great to, bring in those other resources, and when you meet with your counselor, you'll have those kinds of discussions too. If you're on Social Security, what does that mean, and how much would you need to earn in order to be totally off Social Security, and how do you make that transition occur through the supports of someone like a benefits plan?
That's a great...
Does that help things?
That's a great overview. It's some of the key things that I've understood from you. It's kind of getting into the some of the later questions I wanted to ask you, but what really seems to be important to me that I hear from you is that if somebody really goes in with their goals, what they want to accomplish, and in order to accomplish those, what are the limiting factors that are in place, whether it's transportation or daycare, or maybe they need to get re-educated, go back to school to learn a different trade, and they go in prepared with that, it seems to me that they're going to be that much better off and get better attention from a counselor if they have all of that in place. Would that be
correct? The counselor should help you think through all of those things, but the more information that you can think about for yourself, I think the better prepared you come and the quicker the process moves. And the way that I like to think about it is when I sit down with a person, you know, or when I'm in a meeting with, you know, like with, you know, my brother or advocating for an individual, I like to think of it as, you know, here I am as a person, you know, what do I need at home to make me independent and be able to go to work? What do I need in terms of transportation? What do I need in terms of other supports? You know, kind of that independent living perspective.
Sure, like your brother has a 12-year-old that he would likely need to have some, you know, child care support for if he's going to go off work. Yeah, and,
right,
and transportation. So, yeah.
Right, right. And, you know, because he's got a young teenager, he definitely needs some encouragement from other parents.
Sure.
So lazy teenagers. You know, it was that whole thought process for him. So, you know, here's what I want you to imagine. My brother had his accident just before age 40. He was in patient rehab for 7 months. He's in outpatient now. He had a coma. As his coma started to clear, we sat down, the family, we sat down with the doctors and said, yes, we've heard what your diagnosis is medically, but we want to start helping Matt, who's my brother, look at what's going to happen after he leaves the hospital. Because there is life after the hospital, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we started looking at, you know, he's going to be using a power chair. So what does that mean in terms of his living? He's going to need to access, have accessible transportation in his community. He's, you know, we want him to be connected and socially reconnect, because for particularly for a person who develops a disability later in life, it's how you remain connected with who you are, your family, your community, and, you know, living life maybe in a different way, but continuing to live your life. There was also financial consideration, so applying for Social Security, even though he hadn't been, you know, he hadn't completed his hospital stay. And then he also went through a separation and custody, and, you know, the doctors initially said he would live in a nursing home, and we looked at each other and said, oh, no, he won't, because that's not what he wants to do, and that's, you know, not the vision that he has for himself or that we have in supporting him. So it ended up that my, you know, we purchased a home that we had, we worked on to make it accessible. He arranges his own transportation. He's never lived in a nursing home. He has a live-in caregiver. He's raising his daughter. He went back to school. He's working part-time now, and once his daughter finishes school, plans on working full-time. And,
very nice.
He's very involved, and he volunteers at the VA hospital. So what can I say?
That's a great story.
It's the determination of the individual and the supports around that person.
Mm-hmm. That is excellent. That is excellent. I wanted to ask you, on your website, there's this $3 billion of investment to assist Americans with significant disabilities in getting jobs. Now, is there any, will that bring any, you know, new resources into the fold that would make a difference?
Let me give you a picture. If you look on our website, I think the point that we're making there is that the U.S. government spends $200 billion on public assistance, which basically goes to keep people with disabilities unemployed. I mean, it supports people in Social Security or medical care or other services that are very necessary for an individual, but in comparison to that, there's only $3 billion among the 80 programs that's invested on getting people back to work. So I think the point that we're trying to make there is rehabilitation makes a lot of sense. We know that every time someone goes to work and moves off of Social Security or off of medical support, that for every dollar invested, there's a $7 return,
mm-hmm.
which is important for people like Congress to hear.
Sure.
People with disabilities can be very productive if you give them the appropriate support.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing nationally is we serve about 1 million people a year, and the people that we serve, the majority of them are in plans that are 2 to 4 years in length because they're going through training or they're involved in some other type of a long-term support that's getting them ready to go to work. But when we look at how many people are applying or could apply, we've got, I think the current stats right now are about 32,000 people on waiting list, Brian.
Really?
We don't have enough money to serve everyone.
Wow. Wow.
And what happens when states have a backlog is that they go into what's called an order of selection. One important thing I want people to know is the federal law, the Rehabilitation Act, requires VR agencies to have what's called a state rehabilitation council. That state rehabilitation council is comprised of a majority of people with disabilities, but also includes parents, business, educators, other partners that we work with. And that state rehab council determines what happens in terms of the investment of money at the state level, the policies at the state level, and what happens to an agency when they don't have enough money or enough people to serve everyone who's applying. And what that does is that puts into what's called an order of selection, and we are required federally, when we have limited resources at the state level, to serve only the most significantly disabled as the priority.
Okay. Here's a question on that. I don't know if you have an answer for it, but I'll ask it anyway. You know, the audience that we have here at the Disability Digest, and I've been, you know, in all the times that I've done this, if the number of people that want to go back to work is just staggering. The number of people that are interested in going back to work full-time is, like, very low. I'd say maybe 1 or 2%. But it might be, if I surveyed our group, it'd probably be 30 or 40% of everybody would like to do something for work. So my question is this. Understanding that, you know, the SGA today, as this recording, is $980 unless you have a month, unless you have a visual impairment. It's $1,600 and something. I don't know the exact number, but it's a lot more. How does Volk Rehab and the government look at that as far as having people go from a no tax paying situation to making some money supplementing their income and getting back into the workforce that way?
Well, I think we all struggle with this because, you know, frankly, for people who are on Social Security and receiving not just the monetary support but the medical benefits, and, you know, people that we've talked with, Brian, and I'm sure it's your same experience, the biggest fear is losing the medical benefits. You know, that's the piece that is the hardest to replace in terms of the amount of money it would take or going to work for a company that would have that same level of medical support. And I know that's something that Social Security is continuously looking at, and we are looking at it as well, because there's a very low percentage of people that actually move off of Social Security, and that appears to be the biggest barrier. You know, there has been talk nationally about how can we help people go to work but retain those benefits. And there's been some changes in Social Security that allows that to happen, you know, for a period of time. And I think, you know, the more that we see around those efforts, the better for people who really want to go to work but need those ongoing supports. Because for a program like ours, once a person is working and is stable for at least a 3-month period, for other people it's longer, we track them longer, we're required to close their case, though you can reopen it in what we call post-employment services if something changes and you need supports. But our program is measured on employment outcomes and how many people go to work.
Okay.
The combination of benefits is really important.
Okay. The thing that I've learned in listening to members is that health is so unpredictable. And somebody may be in a situation that they could work some now. Maybe they could work enough to get above the SGA. But they don't know for how long, right? So that's, you know, that's the biggest thing. So we're going to get into the ticket to work in a little bit, and I know that that's got some flexibility on it, but it sounds like, you know, the voice is being heard and they're on it. It's just there's really nothing concrete in place right now. Would that be correct?
Yes. I mean, I've seen that as a barrier for several years, and I know many people have voiced it. The key question is, how do we resolve that at a national level, because Social Security is a federal program.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that that's something that we need to continue focusing on and sharing ideas. I know there are some new regulations that I'm really focusing on with our national network with business, and that's a program called Partnership Plus. Have you heard of that program, Brian?
I have not.
Okay. What that is allowing us to do, and we're working with our corporate business partners around that, is that once we have a person in the job and they're stable for at least 3 months, if not longer, but once they're stable in the job, this allows us to work with business and Social Security to help that business become an employment network. So that business is actually getting supports from Social Security for the ongoing support that that person might need in the workplace. So, you know, we've seen things like job coaches available long-term for someone that has a developmental disability, because the developmental disability agency or the mental health agency has the money to help support a person long-term at work. But we've never had those funds available for someone that might have, like, for example, a traumatic brain injury and needs that same kind of support. Well, this Partnership Plus would allow the business to work with Social Security to get that reimbursement that would allow them to have a job coach for other people, or pay for a sign language interpreter, which we all know is expensive, or, you know, equipment or some type of an accommodation that a person might need that would be otherwise, you know, would be something that they would need long term.
Okay.
So we're working with our business partners to help them be part of that solution as well, which I think will be helpful, and that's some changes that Social Security has made there.
Sure.
But, you know, that one's under work, and you can imagine how some of the private sector businesses feel. They don't necessarily trust the government. But we're working on it.
I won't comment on that.
There you go.
One thing I did want to clarify, though. So let's take your brother, for example, who's working part-time right now. Did he go through the VR system?
Yes. He's had support from both the Veterans Administration and VR.
Okay. So what I really want to zero in on for the audience, if somebody is in a position like your brother right now, and they said, listen, you know what, I think that I could get out there and I could maybe do, you know, 10, 12 hours of work a week, you know, and do that. But I'm going to need some help. If they went in and they sat down and, you know, they go through all the wonderful information that we're going to give them here today, what type of a response would they get from a counselor? Would they say, well, unless you're interested at some point in time in working full-time, then we can help you, or we can help you now and see where it can go in the future?
That's the latter. Because, you know, for individuals, particularly those with significant disabilities, and you've already alluded to part of it, disability changes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have conditions like multiple sclerosis, which is, you know, people are impacted by changes in, you know, a variety of things in their life. And so, you know, some days it may be that they can work full-time, other days part-time, other days maybe not at all. So, you know, we understand the disability changes. As people age, disability changes. And that some people, you know, maybe the only option they will have is part-time. You know, we see a lot of that with supported employment, developmental disabilities, et cetera. But, you know, it's looking at that person at that point in their life and where they want to go in the future. And you know, maybe someone comes in with a goal and they want to work full-time, but it doesn't work out that way.
Mm-hmm.
They find out after working that they don't have the stamina, you know, or the ability to do the full-time work. I mean, we close a lot of cases of individuals who are in part-time work status. My brother's, right now, he does not have an active case with VR.
Okay.
So he went through the program. They helped him go back to school. They helped him, provided him supports for independent living to get there. They provided him supports for equipment that he would need in order to, you know, work and to support himself. So he has a laptop, and it was loaded with, like, Dragon, naturally speaking. That's the,
sure,
the software that he uses, et cetera. So those were all put in place, and then he went to work part-time, and so he doesn't currently need the supports of VR.
Mm-hmm.
But when he's looking for full-time work or things change for him, he has the ability to go back for VR, to VR.
Okay. Now that we're kind of in and around this topic, are there any other resources or, you know, general resources that Voc Rehab offers that would be good to let the audience know? I had a few on my list I wanted to ask you about, but is there anything that you can think of that?
Well, you know, people ask, you know, what are the services? And, you know, like I said earlier on, I think the beauty of the program is that it's flexible based on individual need.
Okay.
So, for example, I want to share the fact that, you know, we have worked in self-employment, one of the topics we're going to hit, but, you know, we work also not just the state VR programs, but we have 70 programs that are housed on Native American communities.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an American Indian VR program, which means that the individual lives on or near the reservation and or the village, depending on where you're located. And I worked with the Alaska program, where the VR agency and the Native American VR program worked together to set someone up as a caribou herder.
Wow, that's cool.
So, yeah, and it's cool. And, you know, we've worked with cases where people have become like a professional clown. So we've used VR money to buy, you know, clown makeup, noses, business cards, you know, the support of a person who went through the business planning process. I mean, it really depends on the person. And I think that's the beauty of the program, is we are not tied to a menu as long as we can show that that service will help overcome those barriers and get that person to work.
Okay.
And that, of course, it has to be legal.
Well, yeah, that would be ideal. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about is a pass plan. But before I get on to that, let me just back up a little bit. I'm always asked, always asked about grants. I want a grant for this, that, and the other thing. And grants are one of the biggest misunderstood things that are out there. From our research, they do exist. But, you know, you've got to really be prepared. But relative to the work at Voc Rehab, you mentioned the Pell Grant, which, would that be for education?
Yes, that's offered through the U.S. Department of Education and the financial aid services that they have.
Okay, so if somebody comes in and they do their IPE, Plan for Employment, and part of that includes, you know, re-education or some cost that can be offset somewhere else that could be paid for with a grant, and the counselor will help pull up the resources available? And
yes.
Okay, so it is possible if people are looking for grants that are in line with their plan for employment that they could get assistance in getting those. Now, does the counselor actually help do the grant writing and all the details relative to that?
Well, the Pell Grant is not a grant application per se. It's an application.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not, it's not what you would think about as writing a grant application.
Oh, okay.
But let's throw this out, Brian. Let's say that you're a person who, you are exploring education and you're getting some, you know, Pell Grant, but there's some other grant out there and you would need assistance to complete the writing of that grant. Like maybe there's a scholarship offered by a private company or something. And, you know, you would need the support. The VR counselor, when you sit down with them, if you tell them you need that kind of support, even though the counselor may not be able to do it him or herself, they can hire people that can assist you.
Perfect.
VR counselors carry probably, you know, an average of about 150. They're working with about 150 to 200 people at one time.
Wow.
So what they've done is we've developed a network of community partners and community supports. So, for example, it may be, you know, a person who can help you with career search or resume development or business plan writing, or say that you're experiencing, you know, some issues with housing, and maybe it's a person or an advocate that can help you with accessible housing. There's a whole network of independent living centers, community providers, people who provide assistive technology for people with disabilities, and the VR counselor has the ability to hire the services of those people as part of your plan for employment.
Great. So 150 people, I'm wondering if the person in the clown business went in with the clown outfit first so his case stood out.
No, just the nose. No.
Wow.
No. I mean, people come in with ideas, and you know, I think sometimes, I've worked with people who have come in, and for example, one young student was, I believe the first time that I met with him, he was maybe a junior in high school,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted to be a mortician. And the reason he wanted to be a mortician is because his uncle was a mortician, and his uncle drove a very nice car. So he thought this was a field for him. So we started talking through a little bit about what that meant and what you did. And as soon as he found out that you had to work with people who were dead, he totally changed his mind.
He just wanted to drive the car.
He wanted the car, right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's sitting down and thinking through with people, you know, and this is an example that's tied to someone that obviously doesn't have a lot of exposure to the world of work.
Mm.
But it's sitting down and really thinking through, what is it that you want? What's important to you in the workplace? I mean, for some people it's money. For some people they're motivated by the environment. For some people they're motivated by the profession. And it's really getting to that point of what's important to you as a person and how you work and where you work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that helps drive what your plan looks like.
Okay. I want to jump around just a little bit here and talk about the past plan, self-employment, owning a business, because I've got the clown, you know, stuck in my mind. So
yeah.
Here's another common question is somebody will say, listen, you know, I'd like to start a business. Where can I get money? Where can I get grant money for it? Now, what I've advised people is there's certain grant and funding resources for a starting a business, but if they've got a really good business plan and it's well-baked like any other business, we've seen many members of our site get success by getting a pass plan. I'm wondering if that's what the clown got.
Actually, at the time we worked with that person, the pass plan wasn't an option.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head, Brian. The absolutely most important thing to have in setting up your own business is a good business plan. And I know that I have worked with people, because I will be very honest, I'm not necessarily a self-employment expert. I believe in self-employment as an option, but I know where to find the people who, you know how to do this. So I know that in our local community, we've developed a relationship with the Small Business Administration. We've accessed their small business development centers, their business information centers. I've worked with an individual out of California whose name is Urban Mayares, and Urban is the president of the Disabled Business Persons Association and is a person with a disability himself and has been very helpful in writing business plans for people. There's also the Abilities Fund, which is a small business support organization out of Iowa. So, like I said, there's a cadre of experts in different parts of our field that we really need to draw from when it comes to, you know, pulling together that kind of support.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, adding on your benefits planner and your Social Security people in terms of how those all work together.
Mm-hmm. So are there any tips for people that are interested in, we've got a complete educational course that we did with Andy Leaf out of California that includes the PASS plan, you know, the who, what, when, where, why, how stuff, where to go,
right,
and get started. But are there any tips that, you know, maybe you can add to the mix that would be helpful for people to understand?
for people to understand.
Well, what they're going to need to have. I mean, we talked about the fact that you're going to need to have a really good business plan, likely experience in there. And but is there anything else that, you know, that you could share with the crowd that would be good to know that they're going to be asked or need to have this if they're going to go in looking for a PAS program?
So you're talking about the connection with a PAS program to a business plan itself.
Yeah, like if the clown was to go back in today.
Right.
You know, an example like that. So.
Well, I think it gets back to with the PAS plan, and again, I'm not an expert, and, you know, when Brian asked me to do this, I was very clear that, you know, when I'm working with an individual, the important thing is when you're not an expert to reach out and find the experts.
Yeah.
Because it... For you as individual people on Social Security, this is your support.
Mm-hmm.
And I would not jeopardize that support for anything. I would definitely use an expert like a benefits planner. Or it sounds like you've got some good supports from the gentleman in California.
Sure.
But it's always thinking about how what you're going to use your PAS plan for, what you're going to purchase to support it, how it relates to you becoming employed and independent.
Okay. With the PAS plan, how can you explain the difference between that and the IPE, the plan for employment? Because
the individual plan for employment is a specific plan that's required for vocational rehabilitation. For each person that we serve, they're served with a goal and services that are laid out in that individual plan for employment. The PAS plan is a Social Security requirement.
Okay.
So two completely different federal systems.
Gotcha. All right. Okay, super. Let's talk about this. Whether somebody is seeking employment or self-employment, what tips may you have, other than what we've chatted about, to prepare people for their meeting and contacting a counselor? What would help separate them from the pack and increase their chances of success?
Well, I think, you know, coming prepared, having put some thought into where it is you want to go and why you want to go there, what you want to work, being open, asking for, you know, support in exploring options. If you've got some ideas of a general field that you want to go into, think about learning more about the different environments that you can work in. For example, if you're a person who's interested in working in, oh, I don't know, what's a general area, Brian, that, you know, like?
Well, here's a general area. A lot of people, because of the limitations, feel that they could work from home doing either admin work or some call center work, telesales work.
Well, say you're interested in doing some call center work.
Okay.
You're interested in doing admin support, customer service. So here's the things that, you know, I would think about. There are a lot of different environments you can work in. You know, Brian mentioned working from home, and we are working with some companies that now have what they call home agents. But you could also be working in a call center environment, and some things I would think about would be, are you doing sales? Are you taking inbound calls for, like, service on an item or people calling up because they've purchased something and they're calling in around a warranty? I mean, what environment do you feel comfortable in? Do you feel comfortable in selling? Or would you want to be with a company that does more of that customer service end of things?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to work in a call center, and can you, or do you feel comfortable working in an environment where you're maybe in cubicles close to each other, or would you be prepared to work from, if the option were there, an at-home environment, which means that you definitely have to have dedicated time, a dedicated space, and the equipment to be able to you know, remotely access whatever company system you're working on.
Mm.
So, I mean, those are all customer service and call center related, but you can work in different environments than that. So, you know, knowing a little bit about yourself. You know, I know people who work very well from home. I happen to work from a home office. But it requires that I set the time aside, that, you know, I'm very clear with my family when I'm working and when I'm not, that, you know, I've got the live connections to be able to be online and be able to be to participate, because I work in a national arena with people who are in different time zones than I'm in. So, you know, it's that kind of flexibility and thought process behind it.
Yep.
And some people work very well in that environment, and others prefer something that's more structured. And that's really individual choice, regardless of disability. That's really individual choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, so I guess, again, to recap, it really is, I think that one of the most difficult parts for people is to, first of all, get their head around the fact that they can work and keep their benefits, and then second is to figure out what to do. I know that we're pressed for time. You've got, what, maybe 9 or 10 minutes left, right? But I did gather some questions today from the audience, and I thought what I would do is expand on a couple of the questions that are relative to what we just chatted about, because I feel it would be really helpful for people. So if you're looking at the screen, you'll see that I'm scrolling down, and a lot of these questions have been answered today, and you can always come back and get a copy of this. I'll circulate the questions that are that have been sent in by members. That there was several questions in one area, and so we put them up. But here's one of the questions that came in that was really common. Basically, you know, individuals say, well, listen, I'm highly functional in some areas. I'm not able to do what I did before, but I would like to do something or figure out how to create my own business. So I'll share this story with the audience, and I've told it before, but maybe it'll get the creative juices flowing. And Kathy, if you have anything to add, I'd certainly love to hear it. There was this meeting that I had with a gal about a year and a half ago, and she wanted to go back to work and you know, do some stuff, and I'd run a similar job and income conference. And in that conference, we had another advisor, somebody that was a coach for people with disabilities, and so we're going around and we're chatting, and so we asked her, we said, well, you know, ma'am, what is it that you like to do? And she said, geez, really, you know, to tell you the truth, the way I feel, what I can do and what I like to do is I like to sit around. So we put our heads together, and what came out of this is we understood that she could get in a car, she could go places, and she was pretty reliable, like 2 or 3 hours a day. So we came up with a business and a plan for her to create a sitting around business, which is what she called her company, sitting around. So what she would do is she advertised herself as somebody that would go and sit at your house so that you didn't have to take the day off and wait for the refrigerator repairman or the cable guy or whatever else it might be. And she charged, you know, a nominal amount of money that people could certainly justify paying. Very creative idea. And has gone off and created her own employment, which is one of my favorite stories that I've had in this business. And I know that there's other people out there that if you just kind of sit around and think and ask others in your peer group, say, what do you think that I might be able to do right now, you know, to get back going in the right direction? So that's a cool story. I've always enjoyed it. Any reflections on that, Kathy?
No, I think you're absolutely right. It's the person, you know, thinking about absolutely what it is that they can do, enjoy doing, what kind of an environment they want to work in. I know there was a person that I had worked with who had been a builder. Actually, he'd been a roofer and had an accident and ended up being a person who used the wheelchair. Well, he still had a lot of skills, but obviously he wasn't going to get up on the roof anyway easily and continue doing that type of work. And when we sat down and looked at what we called the transferable skills and what he enjoyed doing, he was very good at ordering materials, and his company hired him back as a materials handler.
Brilliant.
So he couldn't do the work physically, but he could go to the job, take a look at what would be required in terms of the materials for that job, and put together the bidding list for the materials. And it was a great example of him continuing to work for the company, using the skills that he had and had developed working for them, but in a different way.
Wow. Wow. That's super. You know, would you have time, maybe 5 more minutes, to take a few questions from the audience?
Oh, sure.
You do? Okay. So let's do this. For those of you that are out there, here's how it works again. Everybody is in a listen-only mode, and the conference room is kind of like a classroom. Not kind of like. It's really like a classroom, in that if you would like to ask a question for Kathy or I, you can raise your hand. There's a hand-raising feature on the GoToWebinar software. It just looks like a hand up there. If you click on that, I'll see that you have raised your hand, and then I will give you the ability to speak. You'll hear a prompt on your end that will say that you can speak, and it will put us together. So in order to do this, you would have needed to call in and enter the audio code in conjunction with logging in. So why don't those of you that have questions from the last few minutes that we have with Kathy, we will ask those. So I see Dennis has one here. Okay. All right. Dennis, you should hear a prompt and be able to speak to us. All right. Are you out there, Dennis? And I see there's another one. I'm going to click on a couple of you. James Levy also has a question. And Sandra. Okay. The reason why we're probably not able to hear these folks is they haven't put in the audio code. Okay. All right, we have somebody. Who's with us out there? All right. Well, we will continue. We have collected a few questions, and we will leave these folks connected for a minute, and maybe they'll be able to speak to us. One of the other questions that was asked is, who qualifies, Kathy, to use voc rehab? Do you need to be on Social Security? Can you be just impaired? What's the criteria?
The eligibility criteria, as I said early on, is that you're a person with a disability that has barriers for going to work and that you need the support services of the ER. Of course, there are other systems. If you are a service-connected veteran with a disability, then there's the VA system. So if you come in to apply for VR, you may be served by VA first, and there may be pieces of your program that would be provided jointly between VA and VR. If you are injured on the job, there is definitely, a whole provider of, system for injured workers, whether your business is self-insured or you're part of the, larger state system. And that would be the first point of entry for you.
Okay. Great. As far as...
I'm going to walk you through how to get started by contacting the Vocational Rehabilitation Office that's next to you. If you reference the website that came with the replay of the conference and you go down to the resources that are mentioned, the item A there, how to contact your local voc rehab office, if you click on that and then in the top right-hand corner enter your state, that is how you can work your way back to the local agencies that are available in your area. So that'll help you get started there. Regarding other resources that can help you, perhaps they were mentioned on the call today or they were not mentioned and they might be things that you're looking for, like housing or treatment options, etc. If you look at item B, on the resources mentioned section of the website that comes with this, audio, then that will bring you back into the members area. In the members area is where we have absolutely everything you need to know about disability. And there's all the areas that we offer information are listed there. So go on in. That's a great page to bookmark. Pretty much everything that we have is updated and also put in there. The other thing for job seekers, those that want to supplement their income, I'd strongly suggest that you subscribe to our blog. There's a lot of information that's been put up on the blog, and will be even more to come that would benefit you in your job and your income search. For example, in item C, you'll see that there's government jobs for the disabled, 11 companies that hire disabled workers and have them work remotely from home, really the reality of making money in your own business, and a lot of work on tips to help you supplement your income and how to streamline and find out what it is that you can do that is going to be conducive to your disability. So have a look at that. To subscribe to the blog, just click on the blog. You can read the articles. There's an orange icon in that's in the top right-hand corner of the blog as of this recording. If you click on that, that will help you out. Another great resource to help you with jobs and income is the community. This is like MySpace or Facebook. It's free and easy to join, and there's a discussion group that's in there where you can communicate with other members of the Disability Digest website about your experiences of finding a job or supplementing your income. Perhaps you can offer advice or lend a helping hand or reach out and ask questions to others. So the power of collective wisdom is going to certainly help you in getting your job. Supplementing your income. And then also on this page, I put some real-life examples of people that, you know, we've had interviews with that are disabled and supplementing their income. And from time to time, there are openings here at the Disability Digest, positions that we have where you can, you know, take the skills that you've acquired and put them to good work and get paid, making a difference, building the Disability Digest. So that's an item E. So be sure to check that out and come back to that page from time to time. The last thing is these conferences are held every month as part of the monthly Disability Digest conference series. So typically the first Wednesday of every month, we have different speakers cover different topics. So I encourage you to mark your calendar and make note of that and come on back and pay us a visit. So thanks again for listening in. This has been Brian Therrien. Have a great day.